Value Market is Louisville's grocer. Since 1978, Value Market has been your neighborhood grocery store for all of life's best moments. Value Market gets it. Life is busy. That's why Value Market has curbside and delivery since 2013, freeing up more of your time for the more important things in life. Kids' ball games, family visits, work, tailgating, and cookouts. Value Market gets it. That's why Value Market has four area locations to serve your grocery needs. Mid-City Mall, Outer Loop Plaza, Aircoy Manor, and Mount Washington. At Value Market, you got savings in the bag. ValueMarket.com.
Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
Time now for The Drive with Mark Ennis on 93.9 The Ville. The Drive is brought to you by Fitness Market, Louisville's premier location for fitness equipment and in-home saunas. Online at thefitnessmarket.com. Now here's Mark Ennis and
Biggest Biscuit, also known as Dave Skull.
Welcome back into The Drive here on 93.9 The Ville. Mark Ennis, Dave Skull. Phone lines, they are open. 8150-939-3831-939 for the UPS jobs text line. Tennessee and Florida State with the ACC's last remaining contestant here in the College World Series. They are underway, and Tennessee has already gotten to the Florida State bullpen in this one. They are up 2-0 in the top of the first, right? Like, yeah, we're right out of the bat here.
Yeah, but it's top of the first.
And they've got runners on the corners with two outs.
That ball almost squeezed through, too, that crazy bounce off the dirt.
Florida State up very, very uptight all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Tennessee not so much.
Yeah. Loser's bracket will do that to you.
8150-939, that's the number if you want to get in here. Spencer sent this clip a little bit earlier. We're just starting to get some of the preview materials. I know, like, Phil Steele's magazine is coming out. I think, we had our fun at Grant Hughes' expense earlier this week.
Hugh Grant
earlier this week with kind of just a lazy prediction about Louisville, especially relative to everybody else. And I've
so
noticed.
Dumb. I'm sorry. Now I'm just remembering that entire thing.
But I've also noticed that there's – I think people feel like the ACC predictions is an easy place to kind of try to be a risk-free contrarian. Like, I want to be the smartest guy in the room by being the one who finally calls it when NC State breaks through or Miami is finally back or what have you, rather than really looking at these things and actually making the case for any of those teams.
Yeah.
And to me, it feels like there's a heavy amount of just forgetting what Louisville was in it, and that it was just year one.
To be fair, there's a lot of teams in the conference.
Okay. More than ever, in fact.
There are 17 football playing members right now.
Touche, in that regard.
And this is why SMU will win the ACC in year one.
That's right.
Here's our piece for this week.
I mean, I listened to our friend Nikki V, who we had here in the first segment, and Bob go through for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, maybe a whole segment trying to remember all the teams in the ACC and the SEC when they were matching up the challenge the other day. They kept forgetting that there were three new teams in the conference and two new teams in the SEC. Like, what's going on here? Who's hitting out? Who has to sit a team? I don't understand this.
I'm glad, however, that at least there are some people who I think have their wits about them.
Yes.
Like, I think Louisville went 10-2, makes the ACC championship game, and I feel like they're being slept on
a
bit this year.
Yes.
They did lose Jack Plummer, though.
They did lose.
Insurmountable loss for sure. Well, that's the thing. Like, some of it's lazy. Some of it's lazy. Some of it is people adjusting for schedule a little bit in the right way, not where Hugh Grant.
Yeah, he got it totally backwards.
Very confusing. Some people are taking a little bit of a closer look. You know, like with Jack Plummer wasn't. I mean, what's his WAR? You know, like where is he? Yeah. Is he, was he replacement level? Was he lower? You know, just like not trying to crap on the young man. I appreciate the efforts he put in at the University of Louisville, but I think if we had viable options, we probably would have seen another quarterback last year. Just because there were times where he just wasn't even hitting the singles and doubles that you need just to set up the dink and donks to set up the, you know, the dink and dunks to set up the
dink and donk,
the big ones.
Whatever that, what is that?
Dink and dunk. I said dink and donk first.
I know, I think, and I was like, I don't know. Do I know
amazing.
What that is?
No. Dink and dunk. Donk's kind of funny, too, though.
What would that be? Is that incomplete pass? Is that what that is?
Dink and dunk and donk!
It's the blanket makers. Like, you were actually right, somehow. I think a few weeks ago. I was like, oh, you're actually right.
You're actually right. But it's obviously not rooted in deep analysis, you know, especially people are making a lot of assumptions, and I'll say for the thousandth time, like the Clemson stuff. Like, if you want to be contrarian, but be right, put Clemson fifth or sixth in the ACC preseason. Watch Clemson fans melt, and then be right at the end of the year, because they're not going to finish top four.
That's Dave. You're calling it now.
Oh, yeah, I've said that all offseason. Like, I just don't think they're going to do it. And I think they're going to get absolutely murdered week one against Georgia. I don't think that's out on the line.
Well, I want to, Spencer, if we could go ahead and play this. I want to give props to Greg McElroy for saying something about the fact that, hey, I think people might be making a mistake and sort of being so eager to look elsewhere for another contender in the ACC and forget what Louisville did last year.
I think they're being completely overlooked. I don't think they're slept on as much as they were last year. But last year, you just got the sense that there was going to be a real us against the world mentality. No one's talking about us. No one's respecting us. And Jeff Brohm is going to have the element of surprise up his sleeve throughout the course of the season. I think they have a good quarterback in Tyler Shough. Got to stay healthy. I think they'll be able to run the ball. Feel pretty confident about that. I think defensively, you have some massive difference makers along the defensive line, including a guy that should be, you know, in All-American contention and Ashton Gelati off the end of the line of scrimmage. So I look at their personnel, and I think Louisville's really solid. And no one seems to be really talking about them. All anyone's talking about in the ACC is Florida State, Miami, I guess you could say Clemson. I think Clemson's being slept on a little too, to be honest with you. So no one's really talking about Louisville. They're just sliding over there, them alongside NC State, alongside some other teams that have really good personnel. And maybe this is the year that they can break through and make some noise.
The only thing I didn't love about that clip is that the dismount there, they can break through and make some noise. I feel like they made it to Charlotte.
We were in the ACC championship game last year.
But...
And I'm in a coma when it comes to Clemson. Yes, Greg. It's the one part of that I don't like. I'll stay sleeping on him.
It does. I do wonder what the fascination is in among people who in any way cover the ACC with NC State.
Mm.
NC State football in particular. Like, there's just a real – it seems to me there is a fixation on wanting to be the one who called it when they finally put it together. From everybody. I mean, it's the genesis of the Eat Alive Animal thing. Like, started with, like from that impulse.
That it
seems like somewhere along, like, every journalistic career, if you cover college football, somewhere it's like, all right, this is the year I'm going to do it. I'm going to pick NC State to do something. Yep. Like, everyone has to try it at least once. And it's always the same.
Are you even a college football, you know, media member if you don't pick NC State to win the ACC at least once in your
somewhere.
Career.
In Miami, win the Coastal every single year back when they had divisions.
All the time. Didn't matter what they did. It didn't matter.
Still doesn't matter what they did. That's right. Still doesn't matter.
I mean, if they fired Mario tomorrow and they hired someone, I'd probably give them like one more win for that. So that's not going to happen, obviously.
It's funny the perception of him, because I feel like his is kind of just the opposite of Jeff Brohm's. Because I think with most people, they think Jeff's going to have a team that we know they're going to be good at this stuff, really regardless of who their personnel is. And with Mario Cristobal, they're like, they're going to have some crazy personnel. Now, he doesn't have a clue what he's doing with them, but they're going to look amazing. Right? Like, I mean, straight up the Athlon anonymous quotes are basically like, that team looks great, is dumb.
Yeah.
That's, and I look,
Miami's just
bimbos. That's what I said. Like,
himbos.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly what they are. Look, it was nice to hear Greg McElroy at least reminding people, hey, you know, Jeff Brown was pretty good at this.
No, look, those are the, and I will pick and choose the parts of that that I like. All the Louisville stuff I like, the Clemson thing is,
I literally, off, I said, I forgive. I just completely memory hold the sins of the owners of the Bucks because of what they did. So you're free to be as choosy about facts.
Jets legend, Greg McElroy.
That's right. McElroy era. It lasted like a game and a half.
I was going to say, how many games did he start? Like two or three?
It was like two. It comes up in my memories every once in a while. I'm like, start of the Greg McElroy era, let's go. And then like a week later, 2 weeks later, end of the Greg McElroy era, let's go. Just put him on the list. Look, it sucks when you struggle to find meaningful analysis at times. And I understand that the job has never been harder to predict wins and losses from college football teams. It just hasn't, you know, with the portal and how active, especially a team like Louisville, it's got the second most transfers of anybody in the country at 31. So how much of it carries over from last year, you know, and how do you project wins? And we've talked about this several times in the last few weeks and the last several months. I think it'll become clearer as Jeff's here for longer than a year, you know, and he keeps turning over a third of his roster or whatever. And has success, bringing people in and assimilating them into the culture and using them properly and bringing in pieces that fit into his system, because I think that's a big issue with a lot of people that just go find the most talented kids in the portal. It's like, well, he's not a 3-4 defensive end.
Yeah.
You know, you're fitting a square peg into a round hole. You know, he's not the type of receiver you need. You know, he's not a good running back for the zone. Like, what are you doing? You know, like that's not a middle linebacker. You're running a, you know, like it's you have to recruit to your system. And I think that's something that he does exceptionally well on both sides of the ball. And he has to this point, you know, the sample size is small at Louisville, but he's done well to this point. And I feel like, you know, everything that he's brought in is a plus this season. We haven't even seen everybody yet. I mean, I think Thor Griffith is going to be one of the three or four most impactful players that we brought in, and we haven't seen him in a Louisville uniform yet. You know, and those are the type of things I think of, him bolstering the tight end room, you know, him bringing in offensive linemen over offensive linemen over offensive linemen, not worrying about people's egos being bruised. You know, it's competition, and whoever wins is going to start. You know, the quarterback room getting better. Tyler Shuck being brought in as an ultra-talented kid who just has a history of injuries, but everybody acknowledges that's seen him play that he has the talent to be a top-tier quarterback. But not only that, everybody behind them has gotten a year older with another year in the system. Like, I don't think you're going to find many Louisville fans who would, like, be devastated. Like, oh, like, throw up their hands hopeless if Tyler Shuck got hurt in week two. Knock on wood. You know what I mean? But, like, you feel – you don't want that to happen, but you feel good about Pierce Clarkson, where the bottom won't fall out of this offense, you know, if we happen to lose our starting quarterback. Whereas last year, obviously, with the struggles we had with the starter, we didn't have anywhere that Jeff thought confident of going. You know, like, he was not confident in his backups last year. They were the most talented kids in that room, the most talented arms were just too young. They didn't know the system, you know, and Jack knew it inside and out. And that was that comfort level. But I think this year you could see in the spring that he has a certain comfort level with multiple quarterbacks on this roster, which is good. It's a great thing. I think the whole quarterback room is better. He's built that defense into a strength of the team. There's pros on all three levels, in my opinion. That's why it's weird to me when people get fixated on, like, well, we lost Tyler Barron. It's like, all right, man. I'm not entirely – like, it sucks that we lost the depth piece, but I'm not entirely sure if he was going to start or not. I think he was very talented, and he could have, and we had high hopes that he would. And we lose Wesley Walker. That's a really, really talented defensive backfield. I'm not sure what kind of role he would have played in it. I don't know. He might have been a significant piece, but there's a lot of depth back there. You know, we lose Penny Boone. Figured out why pretty quickly. You know, that his agent sold him a bill of goods or whatever, and he didn't want to compete for the starting job. He thought he was going to be given the starting job, and Jeff was very clear, that's not how we operate here. And when the agent tried to pull shenanigans, Jeff showed him exactly how that's going to work in Louisville.
Yeah.
You know, like that stuff didn't make me sour on the offseason or think that we were in a bad place. Like, obviously, when something like Jake Cook decommits, when something like that happens, it's frustrating. You know, if you're getting connected and getting attached to 2025 recruits, which I try not to, but he was one that felt like Jeff got in early.
Yeah, and you'd hope that would count for something, right?
Right, and he got him before he was really even ranked early in the process, and now he's a top 300 recruit by some services, and he might end up being like a top 150 by the time it's all done. The kid is an animal, and he's obviously opening more and more doors every time, and it can't surprise you too much. If as his star rises and he sees opportunities that he hasn't seen before, that he decommits and reassesses. Do I love it? No. But that's them's the breaks. You know, when you have high-rated recruits or kids that you got in early and you hope the relationship, you know, stands, and there's nothing to say that he can't come back, you know, and recommit at some point. But
that's not usually how these go.
It's not usually how these go. But, right. Like, he probably didn't think Ohio State or Michigan was on the radar or something like that, or Texas or LSU or whatever. And while we can win a battle against them in the transfer portal, and every once in a while we get a freshman that, you know, that has offers from the other big dogs, they're going to win those freshman recruiting battles most of the time. There's a reason why the same 15 schools are the top 15 recruiting classes every single year. It sucks, but don't let a 2025 recruit decommitting make you, like, reassess how you feel about this offseason or this fall, because it's going to be a great season. It shouldn't sour anything that you feel about this. And obviously that happened like a week after the Sal's stuff happened. I always pronounce it Souls, and Jeff Leitz said Sal's. And I'm thinking maybe I've been doing this wrong.
So, what are we talking about?
Isaac Sal's.
Oh, my bad. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. I misunderstood what you were talking about entirely.
Because he actually knows people in the family, I think. So okay. I'm going to assume that he knows how to pronounce it better than I do. So,
there's some real hand-wringing about high school recruiting for 2025.
It's interesting to me. It is.
What do you make of that? I mean, I think we have contradictory feelings a little bit. Like, I think, Jeff, you expect him to find diamonds in the rough. And I think that you ask your average Louisville fan, they think, without hesitation, I would take him with a roster 80% as good as somebody else and think, like, they're going to have a great chance to win because of him. And Louisville football, its history isn't what it is without coaches who allow them to just be better than they ought to be otherwise. But I do think that there was some hope when he was hired that recruiting would take off, that there would be it would improve a notch in terms of high school recruiting.
Yeah.
And look, so far, I don't think there's been an enormous increase.
No, there hasn't. I mean, the vast majority of the people we ever committed are 3-stars. In fact, I think Jake Cook, the only consensus 4-star at that point. You know, there's a few others that are 4-stars in some.
Mason Mims.
Yeah, and in right. Some and not others, you know, and they could be consensus by the time 2025 comes around. But obviously, I think the landscape changed under Jeff's feet, you know, after he got hired. Obviously, the transfer portal was already a thing, but it became an even bigger thing right around the time he was hired to be our coach. Every year it's gotten bigger, and I think that in year one he was positioning himself to have as good a season as he possibly can, and he's going to do that again in year two. Now, if you're not completely – we've had this conversation, like the broader conversation about portal versus freshman class and how do you balance that and where do you allocate your funds? I think that it's year to year, but a program like Louisville, you're going to allocate more funds to the transfer portal than an average program or one of the big dogs. You know, you're trying to pick up some of those pieces that are falling off of those elite programs, you know. And the question isn't like whether you should invest in freshmen. You absolutely should. But whether you can invest X amount of dollars in freshmen. Like if Texas is rolling out $1 million for a left tackle, do you have that?
Is that wise to be in that game? Right.
On a freshman.
Yeah.
And I'm you don't forsake high school recruiting. It's still important, and you want backbone guys. But the question is, how many can you afford, you know, that are high-end, like 4 or 5-star kids? How many can you afford? And I don't know what the answer to that question is. I think that we'll figure it out going forward. I mean, we've got high-profile recruits. We got JoJo Stone. You know, we got 4-star recruits in the last 2 classes, big time. We can still do it. But when we're backfilling the talent we lose in to the draft and to the transfer portal, you know, in the first 2 spots on our depth chart, there's only so much money we've got. And we got a call from our buddy Tim on Friday, and he kind of put it succinctly where he was like, look, if your choice is give $1 million, and it's not always this binary, but if your choice is give $1 million to a freshman or $500,000 to a freshman or $500,000 to a proven commodity,
yeah,
like a Colin Lacey. And I don't know what the numbers are. This is just throwing that out there. And you need a top-shelf receiver to help you right now? I mean, do you really have a choice? Which one makes more sense to Louisville? And it's not going to be that black or white always. And it's not going to be one or the other. But when it comes down to specific decisions, I think it is, you know, often.
Yeah.
Now, overall, it doesn't mean that you don't bring in 15 to 20 high school recruits when you can, when it makes sense, and when you have a plan going forward with them. But if you bring in, if you spend a lot of money on 4 or 5 high-profile recruits, some of them don't play their freshman year. What's to stop them from getting back in the transfer portal, and then what have you done?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's,
yeah, you subsidized their redshirt year somewhere else.
Right.
No, I think that Jeff probably thinks, in a lot of cases, they're in a real bind.
Yeah.
That, you know, you don't have necessarily some sort of obscene NIL war chest.
We've got a good war chest, but right, like, not we're talking about A&M and Texas, yes, and right, those type of schools, Ohio State.
They're always going to, I think, going to have the same option they've always had, to sort of money whip people that you did the work on. That happens. Yeah. And NIL didn't change that. But if you're Jeff, like if you're Ohio State, you can go, I think, crazy and that guy not play next year. And just take your time. It's fine. There'll be more. You have an army, you know, of supporters that you're going to be able to subsidize that sort of thing. No problem. Yeah. If you're Louisville and you pay a lot of money for a recruit of some kind, they've got to be impactful right now. They have no choice.
Yeah. There might change when the collective bargaining comes around, you know, and you can get multi-year contracts maybe out of this. You know, it might make more sense to invest in younger players. And I'm not saying, again, you don't forsake the freshman class, but you might lose out on some battles for the higher profile recruits because Texas might put up $1 million or $2 million for a quarterback. And that might be like a third of our entire budget, you know, and we can't do that. We can't do that.
Right.
Whereas we have a reputation for getting into the, and that's not standard, you know, $2 million, but there's some recruits are going to get insane
still
money.
Not sure I believe all of this, but
yeah, some recruits are going to get crazy reported money. Yeah. Cooper Manning, or not right. Cooper Manning, Arch Manning, Arch, yeah, Cooper's son. But like, we have a reputation for getting in the transfer portal and paying high dollar, paying RB1 money to Penny Boone, like his agent admitted after being a blank heel for a while. You know, like that's what our reputation is. Like, when Louisville wants a player, they set their sights on them and they pay them top tier money. Now we may not be able to do that with freshmen too. But we have that reputation in the transfer portal, and I think that's a good one to have right now. You know, and it's not, again, you do not abandon the freshman class. It's nothing like that. But you have to be selective on who you spend money on, and you might need to take not lower-rated kids, but kids that you know can help you, and you have a specific plan for. Like, you take a 3-star that's going to be there for a couple years. Like, he may not be itching to play right away, or he knows he needs development, but he wants to play for a Power 5 program. Or you take the occasional 4-star that can help you right now. Or you take – it's just every decision has to be intentional because you only have a certain amount of money. You know, like, and it's – you aim high, but you make sure that you're smart about it.
Yeah, it's hard not to see – or it's hard to see this as a scenario where anything else makes sense but shorter-term commitments with that kind of money for guys from the portal that you know.
Yeah.
And that you have a far greater idea what they're going to be and exactly how you can use them and sell them on that. But I think if you looked at how Jeff's done so far recruiting wise, like in terms of high school recruiting, it's not irrational or irreverent to be like, I wish it was a little bit more high profile. And it can get there in time. You know, I think you got one thing to also remember when it comes to the high school kids, like Lamar, believe it or not, that was 7 years ago. Those guys were 11, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But after that, 18 forward, which is kind of the last Bobby year and the Scott years were okay. But yet, last year was kind of Louisville's first year, like back up where we want it to be, where we'd like it to be. But it takes time, I think, to sort of reintroduce yourself under the consciousness of the high school kids. Because they're not going out of their way to go find teams as far down the list as Louisville really was.
At that point.
And I think you worry about that a little bit with basketball, too. But obviously, I think Pat's off to a pretty
good
start.
He's doing just fine there.
He's doing just fine there.
By the way, every time I listen to Luke on your show talk about the team, I just get even more excited than I thought even previously possible. He's not doing anything to control my expectations.
Which is something because knowing him, just personally now, he values not overspeaking.
Yeah. No, absolutely. He's not hyperbolic with his statements. And
he's one of the least hyperbolic people of all time.
Yeah. He's very matter-of-factly.
You like that?
Which is funny because he's played for Patino.
Of course, right. Maybe the one place where Rick did not rub off on him at all.
Maybe the most most prone to hyperbole of any coach I've ever heard in my life. Which might be a hyperbolic statement.
It's funny once you become sensitized to it, when you realize there are certain coaches and certain people that just can't stop.
Can't stop.
Urban Meyer is clearly one of them. Rick, Cal, all that. It's funny. And it's lazy.
Yep.
But they can't help themselves, I think.
The most, the greatest, the worst.
Everything.
Everything. Yes. Everything.
Always loved the annual like Rutherford tweet about like, this is the toughest first round matchup I've ever seen with Rick that he always did.
Every single year.
Historically soft bubble.
Historically soft bubble is every year.
Every year.
There's some things that you can just depend on, man.
One of these years we're going to have a very strong bubble. Don't know when that will be.
The strongest bubble. The strongest bubble you could ever imagine.
All right, let's go ahead and take a quick break here. We'll come back here. We'll switch gears a little bit and talk about that the other side with the men's basketball program and Evan Maya's article about building a winner. And we'll talk about maybe the ways in which Pat has succeeded or perhaps not on that. We'll take a quick break. Continue to take your calls, your texts throughout on The Drive on Nathanaville.
Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.
Welcome back to The Drive, presented by Fitness Market, right here on 93.9 The Ville. Now, here's Mark Ennis.
And Biggest Biscuit, also known as Dave Skull.
Welcome back into The Drive here on 93.9 The Ville. Mark Ennis, Dave Skull. Phone lines open 8150 93.9 3831 93.9 for the UPS Jobs text line. If you want to hit us up that way, you are welcome to do so. You can have Louisville Sports Live tonight at 7 on 93 on the Ville. They're going to have David Teal and some others on, and they always do a wonderful job there. And did want to thank the guys from Matzah Pie for dropping off Epic Pizzas and Focaccia Bread for lunch today. We always appreciate that. Head on out to Mott's Pies Anchorage location for a unique dining experience.
It's also a really cool location. It's
you can
cool
visit
building.
The Douglas Loop and Butchertown locations as well. Stop in, pick up some 1020 craft brews, and discover the delicious handmade brick oven pizza.
It's delicious stuff.
Every time.
Yep.
We appreciate that. 8150-939. That's the number if you want to get in here. All right, Dave, we had Evan Mai on. He has been, what's the word here? Effusive.
Effusive, right? Is a good word.
In his praise of how Louisville has done in the offseason and putting a roster together. And he kind of went out of his way to sort of, he writes analysis too. So it's not just sort of an advanced stats table that he keeps. Like he gets in there and kind of digs in on what it takes to build a roster. And in particular, here's what I appreciated about the article. It tried to put together the characteristics of well-built teams, mm-hmm. basically just since the advent of NIL and the transfer portal, which I think we can all agree it really functions like kind of a BCAD line. Like things are different, and everybody, like the dynamics of all of it are really different.
Before was one way, and after is Dan Hurley's way. That's the dividing line.
The BC's before checks.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. So he's written, and look, this stuff might sound simplistic.
After Dan. Sorry.
Oh, that's funny. No, you're. Yeah, that's right. Best roster construction practices. And he basically is like looking at the rosters of all of the teams who ended up being one seeds in the NCAA tournament the last few years. That's. He's like, hey, this is what we're looking at and saying this is the model. Now, this is going to sound so ridiculous, it's not. Fill your roster with good players. But he goes through – the point of that is there isn't – it's not merely age. Like, you can't just have older guys because a lot of older guys are still older in college basketball because they don't have anywhere to go. Right? Like, you want to opt for, in particular, just fill your roster with good players. In scenarios where you might be weighing multiple things, even if somebody is perhaps less efficient, even if somebody is younger, while everyone's preaching mantra for older and all that sort of thing, you have to go. You are better off erring on the side of the raw talent than almost any other factor, and let that be a tiebreaker if anybody's close. So I think looking at what they've done so far, I'm totally fine. I think Pat nailed it. I think like this roster to me, every single player outside of maybe Frank, I can tell you right off the top of my head what I'm pretty sure I know they're good. I don't know I don't know what role he's going to play, and I don't know he's necessarily going to be good.
I don't know either.
But every other guy, like I can tell you, like they're skilled.
Yeah,
these guys are skilled. I will take that.
I love the approach he took with every single position on the court. And I just, every time I get excited about one player or another player, I forget about three other dudes I'm really excited about. You know what I'm saying?
I'm having to budget my excitement.
it's wild because and then Luke comes along. He's like, let me tell you how skilled Rain Smith is.
Right.
I'm just like, all right, man, let me talk about it. Because I feel like Rain, we just kind of took him for granted when we got him. You know, even when him and James committed at the same time, we looked at it and we were like, well, he's a really exciting, you know, prospect. Rain, yeah, he's a shooter. You know?
Yeah.
But Rain was like second team all conference.
Pat Kelsey said yesterday with Bob, he's one of the best shooters in the world.
In the world. Yeah. Like it's not like we don't value shooting.
Right. Or that guy, by the way, like Louisville fans, we love that dude.
We love Ryan McMahon. We love that guy. Yes. Kyle Kirk, even though he's more rounded game than that. Luke Hancock,
the marksman. Look, we love that. We love the Knowles, we love that.
The guy that as soon as he lets it go, you're like, every time he shoots, you think it's going in. Like Tyquan Dean. Like every time it's going in.
It's when you can read the guy who makes the other team frantic on defense, where they're like, they've kicked it over to him and they realize, oh, crap.
Who lost him?
Yes. to me, there's no hope of being like a really elite team if you don't have somebody, maybe more than one somebody, that the other team is like, oh crap.
And this team,
we let him catch the ball.
Right. And this team, if you pay too much attention to Rain,
they've got others.
Yes. Like, every guy that's on the court is at least a decent shooter.
Yep.
If not an elite shooter, you know, and that's what we're dealing with this for their position. And I love the way, obviously some of the things that Evan set out weren't possible for this team, you know, bringing back 50% of your production, mixing in more players like transfers that have 2 years of eligibility left. We have a couple, but stuff like that wasn't as possible or feasible with this roster being in the first year and having to turn over the entire program. You know, you pick guys for fit as much as anything, and you've got a solid like core of guys that are going to come back next year if all goes right. But, you know, the vast majority of this team, of different spectrums of this team, are one-year rentals. But that doesn't mean they can't come in and make a high impact and assimilate quickly and be a proper team by the time this season comes around. Because it feels like – I kind of love the focus on the skill development, you know, and I know that Luke – hasn't seen them compete with each other yet, but it's funny because when you hear a guy like Luke talk about, he's like, you know, Terrence Edwards, he looks like a guy that's not as good in skills drills, but I know that he's an animal on the court. Yeah. You know, like he's going to be an absolute competitor, because his athleticism is off the charts. So we've seen him get his shot, you know, at another school and be a conference player of the year. I just, every time anybody talks about the workouts they've seen, it makes me more excited. God help me.
Now, the second point that he had there is you do want a large portion of your...
I didn't mean to step on that, sorry.
No, that's totally fine. You do want a large portion of your production. Returning players need to account for about 50% or more of your playing time. That's obviously not an option for Louisville this year. But it does, even in a transfer like the transfer portal heavy era, it does sort of lay out for everybody. There's still really no shortcut. There's no replacement for just guys having experienced playing for the coach that they play for through a lot of situations and then facing those situations again. Yep. It doesn't matter what we try to simulate or what you try to sort of come at it some other way, there really is no replacement for, or not really much of a better indicator of how a team's going to do than the fact that they've done it before. And so what I think is interesting about it the most, though, is he lays out, you know, a graph that basically sort of shows the correlation between the percentage of returning minutes from players who played there before versus transfer portal minutes, and it is negative with transfer portal minutes. That there is kind of a the larger and larger and larger increase in minutes of your team being played by transfer portal guys is actually less
diminishing returns.
Related to winning, at least. Yeah. Which I think there's probably, you kind of look under the hood there a little bit, right? Like, a lot of teams that are struggling are just going to jettison their rosters and bring in others, and if anything about the struggles have to do with the coach, it really doesn't matter who they're coaching.
Right.
So like, surely there's going to be some of that. I do wonder
causation versus correlation, yeah.
I do wonder about how that stat, the stat of returning players should count for at least 50% of the playing time. What does that mean in a situation that was as bad as Louisville's? Like, I can't imagine anyone would want – or prescribe, like if I hire Evan as a consultant here, he's like, well, here's what you need to know. 50% needs to come from last year's team. I'd be like, no.
So here's the
we
thing.
We don't want that.
He's analyzing Final Four teams who probably didn't come out of nowhere.
One season.
You know what I mean? Or one, sorry. One
season. But that's the whole season's worth of work.
It's the same thing. Like, it's not the same thing, but the same, you know, basic tenet that they were probably good the year before, you know, or an established program, most of them. And it's still somewhat of a small sample size to this point. But you're talking about a team that was extremely successful all year long. They probably have an established coach that was there the year before.
Yeah.
You know, so they're bringing back a lot of production, or they have the means to bring back a lot of production. They want to bring back a lot of production. This is not like... Teams like Louisville are very rare, you know. It's new coaches, you know. It's Louisville, it's Arkansas, you know. It's teams like that this year, Kentucky, that are turning over their entire roster, you know. And with those situations, even if they make a Final Four run or an Elite Eight run, they probably weren't doing it from the one seed. You know, so when you're analyzing these situations, you're talking about established teams with established coaches for the most part that are getting those one seeds. So I don't like as much as I really appreciate his analysis, and I think there's something to it, and I agree with pretty much all of it. That's the case. That's the best case scenario, and that's the scenario for sustained success. You know, like it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with year one of a new coach in the transfer portal era, especially one that's coming into the dumpster fire that was Louisville the last 2 years with 12 wins in two seasons.
Right, right. I can't imagine. It needs to account for why you would have like massive turnover, and what you would like traditionally think you would get with continuity versus not this kind of continuity.
And why, like, if you have extreme continuity on a team, it's because that team was good. So it just kind of it's is it correlation or is it causation? Like it's or they just go hand in hand. It just might be correlation. Like it's there's not as much of a push. Like people want to come back to UConn because they won two straight titles. And Dan Hurley has proven himself as a developer and a coach, you know. So if somebody's dangling money in front of them or the pros, they can look at it and go, I could probably benefit from another year in school, especially if I'm getting a second-round grade or a bottom of the first-round grade. I can get better.
The third point that he lists is that these teams prioritize recruiting players who will play at least two seasons. And I think that is the one where Louisville – like that's – in kind of modern, some of the absolute best players, like that's exactly how they sort of blaze through here in a couple of years. We were talking about Terry and Donovan yesterday.
Yeah. They're great examples.
Yeah, and Montrez came close to
being
that too.
Montrez is a junior, yeah, but he almost left after a sophomore.
But like that, I feel like that's where Louisville can hit the sweet spot there. Because like a guy like Connie Ruth, I don't know how much he's going to play this year, but Luke was blown away by him yesterday.
I know he was. Did he call him Kanai?
Yeah, I thought it was however Connie. It is, I think it's Kanai, actually.
I'm sure if he met him yesterday, I'm sure he's probably right.
How did PK pronounce in the video he put out a while back? I'm trying to remember, because I can't remember how it was.
I think it's Kanai.
Are you asking me to remember something that isn't random trivia?
I was going
to
say trivia, right?
This was random trivia. How is Connie Roots or Kanai Roots' name pronounced?
Your random trivia. No, because that's relevant to the show, which is something I get paid for. So if
the opposite of trivia.
That's right. If it's relevant to my life, I generally can't remember
that's
it.
That's true.
If it's trivia that is relevant to nothing but stump the gas bag and Jeopardy every night and bar trivia that I do, like that's the stuff I remember.
On Father's Day, Jimmy Kimmel, they did one of those man on the street things.
Yeah.
And they would go down and they basically stopped out in Hollywood, like dads with their kids, and quiz them on facts about their kids, and they sucked. They were awful.
Birthdays,
middle names.
Oh no,
you know, all
really?
That stuff. Teenagers. What's their boyfriend girlfriend's names?
Now you
where
you
do
know
they go
all
to
your
school?
Birthdays and all your middle names. That. You're good. On
I'm
that.
Not. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, where do they go to school? What are their teachers' names? And then the best one. I mean, just failing left and right. Now I'm sure it's edited a little bit, but there were enough that they could make a segment out of it.
Yeah.
Then there was one, this dad could not remember his kid's teacher's name, couldn't remember the kid's middle name at first. Took him a long time to sort of get there.
I hope it was like his dad's name or something. Like it was like, we let you pick his middle name.
Then they bring the mom on and she remembers every teacher the kid ever had. Like all the teachers in order. Oh yeah, just dog walks the guy right in front of everybody.
That's awful.
That is how it goes sometimes.
I don't remember the names of my teachers before third grade, but I remember all of my teachers' names after third grade.
Yeah, I don't either.
Like third grade on.
Well, no, I remember my second grade teacher. I do remember that.
I remember that her first name was Noelle.
Okay.
But I don't remember her last name. But then like third grade on, I remember everybody.
Yeah.
You know, Mrs. Treat was third grade. And then from then on, I'm good. McGuigan was fourth grade. That's a hell of a name.
Mrs. Or Gwales McGuigan. For me for second grade.
Oh, there you go. Truver, Monaco. Yeah, we got them all. That's right.
8150-939. That is the number if you'd like to get in here. So, look, I think it's important to remember, like, with that article, Louisville, I think, has done elements of this. I don't know if you can, like, pile up transfer points and minutes among a big roster and, like, maybe treat it like if you have enough of it, it's like having a returning player. You know, like,
yeah. It's,
because returning player is an experienced player. They do have that.
Yeah.
And they do have some minutes from the coach they played
for
before.
From the coach, yeah. I think that's important to say, is that we do have a couple of players, three on the roster from his last stop, you know, and I think knowing that those last two bullet points were not feasible with Louisville, I think he did the closest thing he could do to those, to Evan Maya's like three principles. And I just, I keep going back to like, look, rosters that are turning over more than 50% of their production, generally speaking, in basketball, generally speaking, probably didn't have a great year the year before.
Yeah.
That's not 100% true. There's going to be years where somebody loses three players in the NBA and four other guys transfer, you know, but those transfers might be bench players, might be this or that. Like, there are going to be exceptions to that rule. But when you're talking about one seeds, I shouldn't say they're not good teams, but they're great teams, like one seeds, they're probably not losing 50% of their production every year. Or at least not the year they were a one seed, you know. And I don't know if you could really aim for that to be the goal. And I think that third bullet point might be the most key part to that is finding players that are going to be there for 2 years, or at least have the potential to be there for 2 years. So if you're bringing in transfers, maybe look for that junior or that sophomore or the freshman that is moving on from a high-profile program that's highly touted, you know. And those type of guys, in addition to the freshman you're bringing in, I think that's probably the key piece, and that's sort of that will cause you to bring back 50% of your production more often, you know, if you're recruiting multi-year players. They kind of go hand in hand.
I think, look, there is a chance, kind of by definition, with these three factors here. Like, he could not do this right now. It's year one.
It was impossible.
But there's a pretty good chance he can have exactly the things that are described right there on next year's roster. The only problem is you would count Ali Khalifa and Kobe Rogers as experienced guys and returning players next year, even though they're redshirting. Like, they've played a lot. They will have been here for a year. Kobe played from at Charleston. Like, you could bring back five guys on this year's team next year. And then have a number of them back for their second years. Bring in a skilled group. Bring in transfers, but maybe a little bit more in kind of a supplemental role. But more than anything, like, it's worth remembering, this is the characteristics. These are the characteristics of one seeds.
One seeds, yeah.
And we had a texter while we're talking about this. He says, "Do you realize how giddy the fan base will be if this is like a 7 or an 8 seed team?"
Yeah,
I think they have I think they have the pieces and an opportunity to be even better than that, Dave.
Oh, I do too. I think that's. I mean, I've talked ever since the roster has been finalized that we should be in the conversation for a double bye in the ACC. I'm not saying that we'll guarantee that we're a top 4 team, but we should be in that conversation until the last 2 weeks, whether we get it or not, a top 6 type team in the ACC, which should be a borderline top 25 team or better, you know, like that. That's the potential for this team in the conversation about maybe making a second weekend, you know. But I do agree that if we have the type of year where we're like a 7 seed and we make like the second round or have a great game, maybe make the Sweet 16, people will be thrilled. People will be thrilled because it's proof of concept for Pat Kelsey that he can do it at this level. You know, if he steals some games, if he beats some teams in the Bahamas, if he beats a Kentucky or a Duke or a UNC, gets a couple of those big wins, I mean, you'll have even more believers than you have right now. I mean, he's got a pretty good cadre of them at this point. But it's not going to take much to get people completely on board. Like, I mean, most people are already. But, I mean, as far as, like, with results, you know, results-based, there's so many opportunities early. I mean, the Tennessee game. Early on.
Yeah.
I mean, if they win any of these games early, people start believing. And they have a chance to have a really special season, I think. Especially for a first addition to the team.
Thinking about these early season games, and we should have the non-conference done pretty quickly. I'm expecting the foreign trip to be announced here pretty soon.
Whatever it is, it's awesome that they're doing.
The fact that it's happening is awesome.
It's
right?
Especially for a roster like this that needs the gel. That needs as much time together as possible. those extra practices, that extra time together, that extra court time together to workshop lineups and everything and consequence-free games, like, it's such a huge deal. We've seen it work for so many teams here and elsewhere, especially in the first year of a coaching staff. Like, this is an absolute perfect time to take that foreign trip.
Yeah, I want you to be thinking, though, about your which of those early or which of the non-conference games early on are either most likely or would provide maybe like the biggest kind of boost. Because, you know, that early Michigan State win for Chris Mack in year one,
huge,
did so much.
Now you just can't leave.
Yeah, like it really carried for a long time. What's that? Let's talk a little bit about that on the other side here. On the drive on Athenaville. Be right back.